This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
It's WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcan, Andy Harton joining us on the phone right now is NBC Sports Boston Celtics broadcaster, color commentator Brian Scalabrine. He's brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when the drains don't flow, and by findmassmoney.gov. Scal, how we doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, and I want to apologize for telling you guys to, you know, STFU last week.
No,
getting a little emotional, man. I just wanted to apologize in advance. I was uncalled for.
Do not apologize for anything. First of all, I was busting your balls. That was totally fine. And second of all, that clip did very well for us on online. So you have nothing to apologize
for.
We appreciate it. And by the way, I did not know that Drew Carter had so many fans on Twitter. There was a whole Drew Hive that attacked me after that. Which, by the way, I was fine with too. But they came for my throat, Scal.
Drew Hive, maybe like a Drew's crew. Like, I think that's probably Drew's crew.
Drew's crew. Yeah, I like that. So we know what Drew's been doing with the time off now. The Celtics
Simpsons.
With all this time off, he was doing that Simpsons broadcast. What have you been doing, Scal?
Oh, my gosh. What have I been doing? You know, like, I'm heavily involved in youth basketball.
Yes.
And I'm actually high school. I've been to a couple high school games this week. I'm heading to a girls practice right now. So I've been really busy. I stay involved in basketball. I have no life outside of basketball. So that's what's been going on. And, you know, it's interesting, like, you know, the five games in seven nights, but leading up to that, we had like three games in 2 weeks. Now we have like two games in 11 days. So I'm making the most of that. But that 5-7 was tough. And we ended up getting bit by Memphis because of it, which was a really good game and a really good team. But I'm glad that's over, and I think we can kind of get back to a normal NBA schedule now.
So the way that Memphis game played out, Celtics didn't shoot well from three, Tatum, Holiday. I wanted to ask you about Holiday in particular. 4 of 17, seemed like Memphis was quite comfortable allowing him to shoot the three. Mm-hmm. Is that an issue he's going to face moving forward? Is that one of those, maybe that's a way to beat the Celtics, and is that a concern for you?
Yeah, so, you know, last year when we're on the broadcast, we call him King of the Corner. He led the league in corner threes last year and just, you know, whatever reason, hasn't shot it well this year. I kind of thought, like, when he took those two games off, whatever was going on with his knee, that it would kind of bounce back and shoot the ball better. You know, I think sometimes you got to ask yourself, like, for some guys that make deep runs, is the Olympics worth it? You know, Derek White seemed to be doing fine. Tatum seems to be doing fine. But, like, you know, was it worth it? I'm sure the gold medal, a two-time gold medalist, made it worth it for him. But, you know, yeah, I mean, those are things that the Celtics might have to address. You know, if Hauser didn't get hurt, would it have been a thing? I don't know why Pritchard didn't play more and they put him in that position and put Drew down at the dunker. It was a weird game. But maybe a lot of that did have to do with, you know, like the really tough schedule that they went through. But we'll see. I think a lot of teams tried the Jaylen Brown thing. The Warriors last year backfired, so maybe it's just a new way to try to stop the Celtics. It's to allow Holiday to shoot those corner threes wide open.
John Morant had a big game. Obviously, that's a guy that you focus on when you play that Memphis team. What's been your impressions overall on the defensive production and defensive effort of this team so far through 24 games this year?
So we're a lot better since Porzingis came back, but it doesn't mean, like, when he's on the court, we're good, and when he's off the court, we're bad. We've been, like, really good across the board with Porzingis back. And, you know, I don't have any problem with our defense except for our paint defense has been really bad, like, up until the Porzingis return. We're trending the right direction. We do have to get better in the paint. Not only – you mentioned Ja Morant, and that was – he was definitely putting on a show. Like, that dunk was ridiculous. Mm. I couldn't even imagine what he did, but – how about Jaren Jackson Jr. just, like, isoing us from the top and going to work, right? So yeah, we kind of need to do a little bit better job of defending the paint. I know some of those shots were tough, but if there was a weakness in this team, and you remember when we had Brad Stevens on, like he was like, it was interesting because we hit 12 threes, which was a franchise record. Madden had tied an NBA record for most threes in a quarter with Brad on, but our paint defense still wasn't very good, and you could tell he was like a little bit frustrated with that when he was on the broadcast with us. But it's something that we have to improve. I don't know why they wouldn't improve it as it goes along. Like we're kind of nitpicking if we think that that's going to stay that way. But I have seen an uptick in our paint presence since Porzingis returns.
We've talked a lot on this show about Celtics' potential would-be rivals and who the rival is. It looks like Milwaukee has certainly re-entered the conversation, and it's led by the Jaylen Brown, Giannis thing. Do those guys hate each other? Is there a real deal thing going on here?
Well, I think the difference is Jaylen Brown has a really serious approach to his game. Like, there's a lot of guys nowadays that laugh and joke and, you know, and that kind of stuff, and, like, they're playful. So that doesn't mean they're not competitors. It's just, like, they have that way about them. Jaylen Brown is not that way. Like, that's just not the way he carries himself. He doesn't joke around a lot in press conferences or anything like that. So I think when Giannis does silly things, or, you know, that elbow or pulls his hand back, I don't think Jaylen Brown takes that as a playful gesture, which other people may or may not. I don't know. But it does seem like the league is kind of lax on that. Like, you know, back in the day, there was the retaliation factor. I'm not sure that that exists nowadays. But as far as, like, the Bucks, I don't want to be dismissive of them because, like, they've been so good in the past. But if you watch them, they're so inconsistent. Their defense is so inconsistent. Last night, you're talking about an Orlando team going on the road, and they had them beat, but they couldn't sustain it. And Orlando came back and won by three. Personally, with 51 seconds to go and Giannis dribbling the ball up, I would have just wrapped him up and fouled him, put him on the free throw line instead of allowing Damian Lillard to have the ball. I think there's a lot of holes in what Milwaukee does. And Giannis was at the there was a point in which he could make up for that, or everyone else was younger. I'm not sure that's the point anymore. The league has changed a lot. They play a little slower, methodical. I know people think that they're back, but I'm not sure I'm on board with that.
We're talking with Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston. Scal, is the sale of the team, which is still sort of lingering over everything, is that something that creeps into your mind at all when you're calling these games and sort of looking at this roster and all these guys making all this money and locked up to long-term deals and into the second apron and sort of all that stuff? Is that something that you consider at all as you look at this team and its future?
No, I don't, and I'll tell you the reason why. And my numbers could be a little bit off with this. When the expansion teams come in, let's say they're $6 billion each, every team is going to get a check for $400 million, right? Like, that's just divided amongst 30 teams. So whatever aprons or taxes that we have paid or are going to pay, which I don't even know if we go into the red with the team, how much money they're making, I have no idea. I would think like a nice big fat check for $400 million would cover whatever it is. And when you have a chance to kind of build a dynasty, I think you kind of push the whole money thing aside. And I don't know if the sale of the team will make a difference on any of that when it comes to this team, or if someone would break up the team, or where they're at with the big check coming from the expansion teams. I have no idea. I just think when you have it's very hard nowadays to create quote unquote dynasties, right? A dynasty is anything that lasts 5 years, right? So we're in year two of that after winning a championship. I think that this team can keep it together for a little bit. We probably have some answers on the Al Horford if he gets older, you know, like that whole thing, or maybe Drew Holiday, as you mentioned, but we got a lot of wings and guys that have good contracts that are coming up. And plus, the TV money that just kicked in is going to make salaries escalate and salary cap. So we're going to be under one of those aprons eventually. So I think we're in a good position given that all those contracts were signed before the big TV deal.
It's not exactly a buy like the Patriots had, but certainly there's more time in the schedule for the Celtics here this week leading into next week. How can the team utilize that beyond just rest? Does self-scouting go on? Do things like that happen in the world of basketball where maybe they can reset with a little fresh air to their schemes or whatever?
Yeah, it's not. It's probably like Joe Mazzulla trying some new things out.
Yep.
Right? So, like, okay, like, I, there was a I'm pretty sure we saw a couple zone in there. He's not doing the 2-1-2 that he did last year, which I hated. I never thought we had great success. And I could tell on the players' face they weren't like 100% behind it. But I'm sure he'll experiment with something else, try something. And then, but a lot of times it's players getting their work done. Like a lot of players like to get their shots, like to get their body work, like to get their lifts. And when you get breaks, you get that. That's why, like, I'm a big believer in I'd rather have back-to-backs and 2 days off than every other. I think you can get more work done that way, right? You get a time to kind of reset and then time to get some really good work done. But the players have complained about back-to-backs, so they've kind of gone away. But I like really condensed schedules and then time off. I did as a player. You know, I don't know how the guys feel about that, but I know when there's gaps, Joe Mazzulla loved it. I know he loves getting back into the gym. I know he loves practicing. I know he loves having good practices and good film sessions. So I think that the Celtics will take advantage of this. And I also know, like, that whole Stay Ready group who are getting a lot of minutes this year, those guys need to get back into the gym and do the things that they used to do an hour and a half before practice. Like, everyone has to find their routine all over again. And you could do that when you get these big gaps. But it's not happening when you have 5-7. But when you have 2-11, you're going to get a lot of good practice time and a lot of time to grow.
Scal, before we let you go here, which Boston Celtic would you say has most exceeded your expectations going into the season at this point, 24 games in, if you had to pick one?
I've always been a believer in Pritchard. I thought he'd average like 12 this year. Him winning Sixth Man of the Year would be amazing. So Pritchard has exceeded my expectations, but not in a negative way. It's not like I didn't believe in him. I always believed in Peyton Pritchard. So I think him... and I think Kata and Cornette, given the role that they had with Porzingis out, has been awesome. And I'll even throw Al Horford in that. You know, Al Horford's going to get old one day. He's just not showing any signs of slowing down at this point.
You told us the story about Flag, and you just mentioned your connection to high school and youth basketball. I saw that the Brockton kid, A.J. DeBonza, just committed.
Yep.
When was the last time New England had the back-to-back number one recruits in the country, and do you have any connection to him?
Yeah, me and his dad are really close. I used to go to a lot of his games and play pickup with them when they were at St. Sebastian because the guy who's the director of my Team White Mamba AAU program is was the assistant coach there. So I'd go into the gym and watch him work. My man was a freak of nature, and now he's starting to get really strong. I'll give you a quick story. Like, him and Cooper Flagg went to Jason Tatum's basketball camp in the summer. And I asked Tatum about Flag, and he was like, yeah, Flag's nice. Like, he has a good feel. I like his attitude. Like, he has that edge to him. But A.J. DeBonza, he was like, man, I've never seen a freak of nature. I've never seen an athlete like that in high school before. So even Jason Tatum was seriously impressed with A.J. But, well, I don't know why New England has risen up like that or why it hasn't been like that in the past. It could just be an anomaly in a way. But both guys have great families. I'm close with both of their families. And they're really good. Like, they have the right attitude to be good players.
Brian Scalabrine, thank you so much for the time. Always great to talk with you, and we look forward to hearing you and Drew on these broadcasts coming up. Detroit, Washington, couple games in Chicago, and of course Christmas and everything else coming up there. Thanks so much.
All right. Sounds good. See you.
All right. Thank you, Scal. That is Brian Scalabrine. He just mentioned St. Sebastian's. I got a little St. Sebastian story.
Oh, do you now?
So when I was in high school, my senior year.
It better be good.
We're playing St. Sebastian's. And
what sport is this?
Basketball.
Okay.
And we were running a half court trap.
Okay.
Okay. I come over. I was in the middle.
Yep.
I come over. Guy's bringing the ball up. We trap him. He gets caught in the corner. He's struggling, trying to get it out. Throws it out. I get my hand on the ball. Take it back the other way for a layup. Guess who I stole it from? Rick Pitino's kid.
Oh, great story. Nice.
Richard Pitino.
He's a coach at
Minnesota.
Minnesota now.
Yep.
You
but
stole the ball.
But before that. He was the backup point guard for St. Sebastian's High School.
Look at that.
And I lured him right into my trap, and boom, 2 points the other way.
Look at, and didn't even choke on the layup or anything.
No, I didn't. I made the layup.
Who's the real White Mamba?
Pretty big deal for me, I got to say. You know, I didn't,
well,
I didn't
sometimes
score,
those
I didn't score
can
a
be,
lot of points. But
you
yeah.
actually see even good players every once in a while on those breakaways in high school,
yeah,
like miss an easy layup.
One. Yeah, for sure.
Especially the glass is different at different places sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And look at you with his big boy story there.
Yeah.
The real White Mamba. You're right, Stiz.
That's right. And I'm sure that really haunted Richard Pitino for years.
How did you fare when EEI, didn't we shoot, we had like an event where we shot, there was like
yeah,
some
Fourier's
shooting thing.
And I didn't get to be part of it.
Oh, that's right.
They let Mego be in it and not
it's
me.
It's not an issue. Don't worry, Stiz.
And then Fourier in the morning, he's like, oh, by the way, we got an extra spot if you want it. And I was there with George, so I was like, okay. I rush George over to my mother-in-law's. I fly out to Alston. And by the time I get there, I change into my shirt. I'm ready to go. And they're like, yeah, we're not doing any more shooters. And they,
right.
You know what?
Because
they were
that.
Scared. Dana Barros and Scal were scared of what I was going to do. They were scared of what they were going to see. And I don't blame them either. I would have been scared, too, if I saw myself walking into the gym, knowing that it was just a shooting with no one defending me type of situation, because that's where I excel.
Do you shoot a lot?
You know. Not as much this past year. Since George was born, I've been cutting down on my going over to the playground and shit. I don't have a hoop in my house or anything. But there was a playground down the street. Still is a playground down the street I used to go to when we first moved. And I used to shoot there like 2-3 times a week.
You know who I'd like to see you play?
Who?
Curran.
Oh, yeah. Curran,
I feel like
Curran's got some game.
And I think you both would get competitive, and I think there's a chance a fight would ensue. So
oh, for sure.
I would absolutely love to see you and Curran.
I'm all elbows in the post.
Man. Oh, I can imagine.
Ask Richard Pitino.
Giannis.
He'll tell you. 617.
Wait, you didn't say you elbowed him before you stole the ball. Oh, I mean, okay.
That is a key detail that we've been missing this whole time.
You broke his nose and then stole the ball.
It just went from a game to an assault.
Right. Hey,
Pitino still breathes wrong because you clocked him in the nose 20
like
years ago.
Click in his nose because you snapped it.
The refs didn't call it. What do you want from me? 617-779-7937. Next break, I'll tell you the story about the time Dan Gadzurek sent one of my layups into the fifth row. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Quick break. When we return, the Boston Bruins got the you know what kicked out of them last night, but at least they won their fights. We'll get to that in a new segment called Fight Night here on WEEI Afternoons. Right after Dan Ball, get you caught up on what's trending.
This is Eminem.
That's true, it is. How about that? How about
Ladies
Andy
and
Hart?
Gentlemen, Andy Hart.
How about like, rap and hip-hop expert Andy Hart?
It's like
nailing this.
One rejoin every, like, 4 days, I'm, like, excited to answer who
the
this
Source
is.
Source Magazine who?
Yeah, pretty much. You know? Hip-hop historian Andy Hart over here.
Damn rights.
Can I tell you one thing I'm sick of before we get to the Bruins?
Oh, boy. Happy Arcand gone. We're back to sick of something Arcand.
We knew that wasn't
sticking
around. Well,
it's 4:30. We're getting close.
We are.
He's got about 34 minutes.
He's itching for the bitching.
That commercial where the janitor sings and the co-workers buy him a tuxedo off of Amazon and make him sing what the world needs now is love, sweet love, and that is, you know what I'm talking about?
I do not.
You haven't seen that ad?
No.
That ad's on all the time.
Why do you watch ads?
Because they're ads. They're on.
Is your clicker broken?
No, it's not broken. It's just I don't always have something to switch to. You know, it's just sometimes I'm just stuck there on the thing. This ad's on constantly. You haven't seen this?
No.
It's a janitor, right? He's mopping the floor, and he's singing, and the people who work in the theater, he works in a theater, and all the other people who work in a theater are like, oh, this guy's really good at singing. Let's buy him a tuxedo off of Amazon, which, if I'm the guy, I got the tuxedo from Amazon. I'm like, thanks, guys. This is great. Thanks so much. And then they say, they hold up a sign, and they say, sing. And they all sit there, and the janitor in his new Amazon tuxedo sings, what the world needs now is love, sweet love, to basically an empty auditorium except for like a handful of his coworkers. And I've seen this ad so many times that I just, if I'm this janitor, I got to be like, all right, so now I have to put on a show for you too? You're giving me this cheap tuxedo, and now I have to come up here and perform for you?
I get to entertain you?
I'm some sort of clown?
About.
I amuse you?
Seriously. Maybe I've just seen it too many times,
wow.
And it's driving me nuts, like Peyton Manning or whatever, but I've had it with this ad.
Sounds like it was kind of a, you know, good moral ad.
And what's it for? Amazon?
It's an Amazon.
He said Amazon seven times.
No, I know, but I was like, is it an Amazon?
He gave them plenty of free ads.
And
sure
Happy Arcand is ancient history tonight.
Long gone, hard to find.
Yes, it is. And if you think that's bad, how about the Bruins last night? You want angry Arcand? Holy moly. That was, listen, we all expected this was going to be a tougher matchup against Winnipeg. I didn't think they were going to get the bleep kicked out of them like that. I didn't think they were going to walk in to a buzzsaw and have Winnipeg really from the jump. I mean, that game was never really close. And to see them melt down like that in the third period, to see Swayman now, one of the worst goalies in the NHL. I mean, there's no dressing this up anymore.
That bad angle goalie on the goal line extended there,
yeah.
Like, I don't know how that got in.
I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what's
wrong. You're
right.
He kind of stinks right now.
He sucks.
And then you got Brad Marchand kind of throwing him under the bus afterwards. Like, yeah, no, I don't feel bad for him out there.
Right.
He's part of the problem.
He said, I'm not going to isolate him.
Right.
We all had a bad game. But,
he said, basically, he's part of the problem, too. We all stink.
Mm-hmm.
You know what this felt like? This felt like the final straw to fire your coach if they hadn't already done that.
Yeah.
This performance. I mean, you got the coaches yelling at each other between the benches. You got multiple fights going on. You got falling apart. Like, it was bad penalties, which they had bad penalties, and then they had bad penalties that I'm not even sure were penalties, but it didn't make a difference. You were, like, non-competitive in that game.
Do we have Marchand after the game talking about the bad practices? Because I heard this, and I thought, oh, you had bad practices all week, did you? That's weird, because you've been kicking ass, right? I mean, you've been beating all these bad teams. You've been running up your stats, and Marchand's been scoring all these goals, and Swayman looks a lot better, and so forth. And then after the game, after they get dusted 8-1, here's Marchand.
Coming. Our practices have been sloppy. Our execution's been off there. And it bleeds into games. You know, the way you practice is how you play. It starts there, and you're big enough. So we need to do a better job at being good at practice, and that will translate to games.
Isn't that partially his job, right?
Yes.
He's a captain. Aren't you supposed to be running these practices a little tired? Aren't you supposed to be cracking that whip there, Marchand? Like, I understand it's good to call your team out when you think they're doing something wrong, but, yeah, we expected to get our ass kicked by Winnipeg. Our practices weren't very good. Well, how many bad practices in a row did you have? And how come you didn't fix it? How come you didn't do anything about it? Like, why are you telling us this now, you know?
Yeah, I hate the retroactive tell me how practice was. Like, oh, we won the game. We had a great week of practice. I wish everybody, like, Patriots, tell me on Friday how the week of practice was. Bruins, tell me in the morning skate how the practices have been going so I know what to expect. Don't wait to see the end result on the scoreboard and then tell me. It reminded me a little bit of earlier in the year when we found out they were fat and out of shape in camp after they already sucked to start the season. Like, okay, well, I don't like that. But this was an embarrassing game. I said to you, you like to say when the Bruins get shut out, the Bruins got blanked.
Right.
They scored a goal last night, but they got blanked.
Oh, yeah.
They got absolutely blanked hard.
Blanked hard last night.
Very hard.
Up in winter.
That was a get-wrong game.
Yeah.
That was because they had built this 7 wins in 10 games, the Sacco era. I don't know about the and they were even talking about it on the broadcast, how you started to wonder, was the competition the biggest factor in the success after Sacco took over? I think you got the answer last night. I don't want to overreact Arcan style to one game, but if last night was any indication of what this team is when they face a legitimate opponent, a 29-0 opponent, they're not very good.
No.
And I don't know that they've fixed what we felt like we were starting to give them credit for fixing. Better execution, a little bit more cohesive offense. Like, the bottom fell out, and some of the goals they gave up were, again, they looked slow. They looked a step behind.
Yeah.
They looked like a varsity team was playing with a JV team.
Yeah. And some of the goals, like Lorai had the puck, and he's trying to break it out. Marchand and Pastrnak take off. They're out of the play. Like, they're gone. They're long gone. And you're like, well, wait a minute, guys. Let's get the breakout going first here. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. All of a sudden, there's a turnover. Boom, back the other way. Puck's in the net. I feel like that happened 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
And these are your guys. This is Marchand and Pastrnak. These are the guys who shouldn't be out there picking spots. They should be out there contributing and participating in the play until they're ready to actually go into the zone. And they're just taking off and leaving these guys hung out to dry. I saw that a bunch. I didn't like it. I didn't really like anything about that game. Yes, Dan.
To go back to something you said a couple moments ago, I don't really think it is a good thing that Brad Marchand's calling out his team right now. And this is a very anti-Bruins thing that I feel like we're starting to see percolate this year, where I feel like in the past, more times than not, we wouldn't hear it, but we'd see it. They'd handle it, and all of a sudden it'd be better. But now I have to hear about it in a postgame after you just got whooped on the road against a good team. And is anything going to change? I don't know, but I don't like that kind of direction versus years past.
Bergeron would call out a team. He'd call out the team sometimes. You'd see it on, like, Behind the Bee or one of those shows or something. But, like, once in a while, he'd go out there and he'd say what he had to say.
All right, okay.
He didn't do it a lot, but he'd call him out.
And I don't know, there were a lot of opportunities in recent regular seasons.
That's true.
That's the other thing.
Wasn't a lot to complain about.
You're kind of trudging through this season, so there are opportunities for this. And maybe we use the word desperation with Monty over the course of time. Maybe there's a little desperation in Marchand's sort of internal clock of the season. You know,
the biological clock is ticking, so to speak.
Like, I only have so many more years. Right. This season is getting toward, you know, the quarter pole is gone. We're heading towards the half pole, and we haven't really fixed anything. We're the kings of the dip poos. Like, if you give us crappy opponents, we'll beat them.
Right.
But other than that, we're not measuring up. And this was probably alarming to him.
Yeah, it was alarming to me. It should be alarming to people. I think Joe Sacco probably watched it and was like, okay, like, this is what happens when we're not playing Detroit and Montreal and these other crap teams. This is what a real team looks like, and this is what we look like against the real team. They may have gotten their ass kicked on the scoreboard, but the Bruins did pretty well in three fights. And that brings us to a new WEEI Afternoon segment that we're debuting right now called Bruins Fight Night. All right, so there were three fights in this game. They all happened in the third period. Bruins just started gooning it up after they went down like 5-1 or 6-1, whatever it was. They knew the game was over. They were trying to get a spark. And it began with Trent Frederick, who went after the not exactly imposing David Gustafson, who is 6'2", 196. Frederick clocking in at 6'3", 221, a guy who is no stranger to the fisticuffs. Here's how that fight went.
All right, follow. Look out here. It's Gustafson dropping him with Trent Frederick out at center ice. Frederick, a right hand. He just dropped Gustafson with a straight right.
So that's pretty much it. It was one punch. Frederick got right in there. Gustafson went down. Gustafson, not a fighter, really. That's not really his game. Frederick, it is. So I think we all expected it to go like that. Right off the face-off, Frederick was all over Gustafson. I mean, he was throwing cross-checks at him like he knew something was going to happen there. I thought one of the teammates, one of Gustafson's teammates, one of those big guys, was going to come over and fight Frederick. Instead, right after this, Logan Stanley, who is a moose, 6'7", 231. The guy's basically Jason Tatum out there, going up against our guy, who's no small guy himself, Mark Kastelic. Here's how that fight went.
Now Kastelic's going to go with Stanley. Kastelic a right, Stanley a right, Kastelic a right, Kastelic a right hand. Kastelic spins him around. Kastelic a right, Kastelic a right, Kastelic another right. Stanley holds down. This had been brewing since the last TV timeout.
That's true. Kastelic had been wanting to fight basically the whole game, so he finally got his pound of flesh there from Logan Stanley, a tall drink of water. And Kastelic won that fight, too.
Absolutely.
I mean, Frederick clearly knocked Gustafson down. Kastelic, despite being 3 inches shorter and about 5 pounds lighter than Logan Stanley, definitely got the better of him in that fight. Got way more punches off and was able to sort of lock up Stanley's big right hand. And I'd say Bruins 2-0 so far in these fights, which brings us to the last one. And that is another heavyweight bout. You got a heavyweight bout there with Kastelic and Stanley. How about Nikita Zadorov and Adam Lowry? Zadorov checking in at 6'6", 248. Lowry at 6'5", 210. This was the last fight of the night. I don't think we have sound of this, so I'll just go ahead and tell you that Lowry started off with some body blows, which I never understand the body blows. Guy's got armor on, basically. You got to go for the head. I know they're wearing helmets, but at least you got a better chance of connecting up there. And this one, I don't know if there was a clear winner of this fight, but I'd still probably give it to Zadorov. I'd say Zadorov was a little bit. He ended up wrestling him down at the end. He got a couple punches in. Both guys got their shots in. Lowry basically was saying, all right, enough of this. You guys want to goon it up. Let's go. I'll give you a fight.
And after the first two, during the penalty announcements and then the benches were yelling, Lowry was just skating around, talking, yelling. I mean, I don't know exactly but he was engaging the Bruins bench. He wanted this, and then they went for the faceoff in front, and they dropped and came together old school. It also hit me in this little phase here how much I like hockey fights and how ridiculous they are.
Yeah, they are pretty funny.
Like, when you just think about it, they're unlike nothing else, where fighting, other than like boxing, which are actual, but
it's not really like boxing.
No, that's what I mean.
Because you have to hold the guy out, you know? You got to try and hold his arm back.
And I love, my favorite is like the jersey jab, where you grab the jersey and then you do the little chin jabs, trying to get a bunch of little like rabbit punches in.
Yeah.
But just to think about,
Thornton was good at that.
Oh, very good. And that would worry me the most. I feel like you see the big rights coming. It's those little left-hand jersey jabs that I think could actually leave a little, like, you could wake up with a sore jaw the next morning.
Yeah, you certainly could. Here's the sound from Zadorov and Lowry.
Yeah, here we go. So this is going to be Lowry and Nikita Zadorov. These are two big boys that know what they're doing. Lowry's got his grip. Zadorov with a reach. Advantage it at the thing. They start to trade. This is a heavyweight tilt. Zadorov 6'6", 245. Adam Lowry is a big man, but undersized in that matchup. And that is Adam Lowry once again. Pissed about what he saw. He said it, and then he did it.
Said it, and then he did it.
I like how he's like, yeah, Zadorov 6'6", 248. Lowry, also very big. Don't have his height and weight right now, but he's also big. Like, yeah, the heavyweight fight.
Yeah, no, that was That was the only redeeming entertainment value from a Bruins perspective in that 2+ hours of just debacle.
Yeah. Ugly game. Ugly, goony game.
Plus, I had already had like an eggnog and a half at that point, so I was ready to yell at a hockey fight.
I kind of was. I was feeling good. The whiskey had kicked in a
you
little
had
bit.
To, you were on your feet screaming at the TV. Oh, yeah. I can see that.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed it.
Your daughter's
punch
like,
again,
what?
Trent.
Your daughter's like, I thought we were watching a Christmas movie tonight, Dad.
Yeah, she was probably on like TikTok or something.
Yeah.
Damn
kids. Get back on TikTok. I'm watching men fight.
Weirdly, on skates.
Yeah, awkwardly.
They had helmets and gloves on. They took them off to fight.
Yeah. Like men.
That's what we do. Bare
so
knuckle.
There you go. So far, Trent Frederick, Mark Kastelic, Nikita Zadorov, I give them all wins. Bruins now 3-0. We're going to continue this. We'll keep a tally of all the fights.
We got to make this season entertaining somehow.
We're going to have to do it because I'm telling you, the hockey-wise, not that great. So, we'll keep track of all the fights that the big bad Bruins get in, how they do, and how many they win, records, all that stuff. We'll let you know as the season goes on, and we'll tally it all up at the end of the year. I know that the season's already well underway, but we just thought of the segment this week. So there you go. What do you want from us? 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll get to some phone calls on Bill Belichick, on Garrett Crochet, the newest member of the Boston Red Sox. We got all that coming up next. That was Ross Tucker with us yesterday.
Really cracked himself up.
A hot take there on Bill Belichick. I liked it. I thought it was good.
He played one game with Bill, right?
Settle down. You sound like a freaking Twitch chatter. This guy arrived, played one game, and was a healthy scratch. What does he know about Bill Belichick?
He did. What does he know about Bill Belichick?
You guys are embarrassing. Pull your head out of his butt and come up for air once in a while.
My Lord and Savior, Bill Belichick.
The guy is flawed. Only one perfect man ever walked this earth, according to Matthew Slater.
Tom Brady?
Jesus.
Oh, him too. And also, how about Jake in Boston, another perfect man among us, who joins us on the phone right now. Hi, Jake. How you doing?
Gentlemen, yes, I am perfect. How are we doing
this afternoon? Doing good. Where you been, Jake? We haven't heard from you in, I don't know, since the show started, basically.
Honestly, I'm prepping for New Orleans right now. Got a whole bunch of like decks and client work getting ready for Super Bowl. So
sounds good.
Listen, I'll give a Schefter follow up for you. The University of Carolina trustees and powers don't want to set up a Carolina blue carpet for Stephen Belichick. And they're also concerned not just at Bill dating a 24-year-old, but they have a 24-year-old golden child wonder kid field hockey coach named Aaron Mattson on payroll. And she's a part of these processes here. That's how much they respect her. I don't know how she feels about that. Mm. On Bill's end, though, it's really interesting because Bill would be a public employee, right?
Yes.
So Bill's love of not being transparent kind of goes away because Bill's going to learn what happens when you get FOIA'd and quickly, including public records requests for things he doesn't like to give up, like specific titles of specific people he's hiring and their specific salaries. So remember, Bill used to hide his coaching salaries, you know, like bottom of the barrel coaches. We don't know what they make. We knew that they were not paid well compared to his kids. Now that's going to be very well out in the open if Steven or Brian or Little Lombardi or any of the Nepo babies get hired and brought in. Like, their salaries are public record in North Carolina. It's like if the Globe were there and could have FOIA'd the Patriots for the last 25 years, I think they would have lost their collective minds doing so. And I wonder if anyone's going to FOIA this 400-page book report that Bill supposedly provided on how to build a program. And listen, the one thing he does have that he doesn't have here – Chip Alexander, who's the reporter for covers Carolina for the Raleigh News and Observer, guy barely knows how to use social media, much less a computer. So he's not going to be the one to do that. But maybe some whippersnappers at the Daily Tar Heel or at a very good journalism school, the Corral School of Journalism in North Carolina, may want to make a name for themselves. And there may be student reporters who actually see this as an opportunity to, I don't know, be a combatant with the greatest NFL head coach of all time and literally hold his feet to the fire, similar to, you know, how some reporters here, maybe Steve Cooper, Channel 7, you know, the Channel 7 boys who would come up whenever there was a big news story. Maybe there's a Daily Tar Heel reporter or a Carolina TV reporter who's a 21-year-old student who goes, I'm going to be the next Adam Schefter because of this, and actually does some digging and makes Bill very uncomfortable.
Yeah, you know, Jake, that type of thing.
Now,
That type of thing has happened before, you know? I mean, you've seen that with student newspapers. They've broken stories before. That's definitely happened before. I do think that there is an element to what Jake's talking about here. There is an element of that. However, Deion Sanders is a public employee. The University of Colorado is a state school, and no one knows what the hell he's making.
And
so they could FOIA it, I guess, I mean, if they really wanted to. I think in this case, though, he's given this thing to other people. Like, this manifesto has not just gone to UNC. He's shopped it around to other people. I think if people want to know, like, all the stuff's in there, all the salary structures and minimums and all that stuff, it's all in this thing, allegedly. That's what our friend Ollie said. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's some sort of NDA attached to it. Like, I'll send it to you, but then you have to sign this thing saying you won't ever reveal any of this stuff. But how well is that going to be kept secret if he's sending it all around? You know, like, I think eventually details of that will come out on their own.
And the reports were that he's already shared it with other NFL teams.
Right.
So now we have multiple organizations seeing this. As far as the money, the only question I would ask, and Jake probably knows more about this crap than I do, is a lot of times these collectives are not actually directly affiliated with the school, these NIL collectives.
Mm.
It's the gray area that's become very weird. And I wonder, could Bill Belichick go to North Carolina, be paid, I don't know, whatever Mac Brown was making. Let's say he was making $3.5 million a year as the head coach. But the collective is also paying him an unknown sum.
Yeah.
Right? That's off the books. That's not federally funded and state funded, and therefore you have no recourse in terms of finding out that number. I think there's always a way to hide money if you want to hide money. And I'm guessing Bill Belichick is aware of these ways.
I would imagine he probably is. I think that's just normal. And it's funny for these boosters, right? It used to be, let's get this kid a tattoo and maybe we'll buy him a used car or something like that. Now all of a sudden they got to kick in $13 million for Bill Belichick and his kids and all this other stuff. Like, it's just, it's a new day. It's a brave new world in college football, and Bill's trying to be at the front of it. And I'll give him credit, you know, for an old guy and teaching old dogs new tricks and that old cliche, he's trying to learn some new tricks
and
here.
It's probably challenging his intelligence, his ego, like, he sees this as a challenge. He's coached in the NFL for 40 whatever years, coming up on 50 freaking years, 48 years of NFL, and he looks at this and goes, I can do that, but it'll be fun. There'll be a little juice, I would think, to that. You still think it's going to happen?
Yeah,
I'm still dubious. I'm sorry.
Well, when it's actually,
like,
let me say
we
this.
Got a few issues. It's your
them
salary,
the
your son, the money, the other money. Like,
UNC now saying the ball's back in Bill's court after Bill's
called his bluff.
After he reportedly said he wasn't going to budge on any of this stuff has me thinking less likely to happen, but I still think they're very far along in the process to suddenly blow it up.
I think we will have like a joint statement of, while we were both had legitimate interest in this opportunity, for reasons beyond our control, we were not able to make it work at this time.
What's Bill do next?
I don't know.
Right?
Schefter was a little squirrely on that
answer.
He kind of said Bill might see the writing on the wall. Nobody wanted him last year. And is anybody going to want him this year?
Right.
And I think there's some truth to that. Now, he can find a job if he wants a job. Don't you think? Like, if he really wants to work.
Yeah, he's got like 10 media jobs.
No, but I mean a coaching job.
Yeah.
If he just wants to coach, but you got to coach on their rules somewhat.
Right, he could take this UNC job and just coach.
Right.
Yeah.
Without all your parameters in place, or go somewhere else and maybe get some of the parameters. But I think he probably looks at
and
that.
And then next year, he's going to be back in the NFL. Yeah, you'll see. He'll show you. Like,
well,
you're going to have to hear that for a whole nother year.
Or gets more yoke.
Right.
Like Charlie Weiss, when he went to Notre Dame, remember he signed like a 10-year extension after the first year?
But he wasn't 72 either.
No. Yeah. But he wasn't Bill Belichick either.
Right.
So there's that balance.
It's
if
true.
Bill goes somewhere and has a good first year and they go 8-2 and go make the playoff, you don't think he's going to get more of what he wants in his binder of wishes? I think he would.
Probably would. Mike is in the car with a thought on the newest Boston Red Sox, Garrett Crochet. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, guys. This is a great move by the Sox. They got the guy with the best stuff in baseball short of Paul Skeens. And I think it's just perfect. It hurts to give up Braden Montgomery, but this is a big move. This is almost as good as getting Soto. Crochet is going to be a monster.
I think he's going to be a monster too, Mike. I don't know that this is on the same scale as Juan Soto, who's already a proven future Hall of Famer, basically. I think that Crochet certainly has big-time potential, Cy Young Award potential, that type of thing. All-star, he already was an all-star. I do think he has stuff up there with Skeens and Scooble and guys like that, absolutely. But it's all, right now, I wouldn't say it's all hypothetical because we did see one season of it, but the idea that he can do this for an extended period, that they lock him up to a long extension, which they have to, basically, like all of that, not quite a slam dunk. Slam dunk that he's going to be your best pitcher, I think. I think that I can confidently say he's going to walk in here and all of a sudden, you know, everybody's going to know who the ace is and who the second, third, and fourth guy is, assuming they don't do anything else. Maybe they get Burns or trade for Cease or do something other than that. Even if they do, I still think he has potential to be the number one guy.
Yeah. No, I think if he hits his potential, if he pitches to his potential over an extended period of time, you can absolutely make an argument this is a more valuable addition. There was a need. You needed an ace.
Yep.
You didn't really need a left-handed bat.
Nope.
Like, and he's a great player. I'm not saying you didn't want Soto, wouldn't help you make you be better, everything. But pitching's more important. And if this guy pitches to his potential, this could be a I think it's Pedro-esque. It sounds dramatic, but this could be your next generation Pedro.
Yeah. Listen, Pedro had pitched like 500 innings or something before he came to the Red Sox.
No, it's different.
So it's
but
a little different.
It's a young ace
right.
that could be on your roster for the next long period of time mm-hmm. and atop your rotation.
Yeah.
That the chances to get that in baseball are not frequent.
No. People were maybe hinting that Brian Baio could be that someday. I think
he's
we
not.
All agree he's not. He could be a good guy in the middle or the back end of the rotation, I think, and that's what he's going to be continued to be asked to do. And maybe he gets better. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Maybe some
out.
Pressure's off, and he's like, oh, they're yeah. not really counting on me, and now I can just kind of
do my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what an ace does.
It
That's
does.
The value of an ace. Now, you have a young ace. All these other guys, Hauk and whoever, can fall into their roles as twos and threes. And if you're dreaming like Lou Maloney, maybe he's your two and Burns is your one.
Mm. Yeah. Sure.
I got Happy Arcan to that
yeah.
one. He's back.
Dan wasn't impressed.
Dan wasn't impressed by what?
I turned to Stiz after you said Garrett Crochet and Pedro Martinez, and I said, that's a little strong.
It's closer than Brian Baio and Pedro, and that's what we were doing this time last year.
It's true.
I mean, yeah, but those are still miles away
from...
It was
Baby Pedro. We had to hear that for like a year and a half.
I'd settle for him being the next Josh Beckett, Chris Sale, whatever,
sure.
David Price,
okay,
like any of those guys. Like I'd settle for that. His team needs that. And I think that... You're underestimating, not you, but people in general are underestimating just how much better Crochet is than the guys that you have.
That's what
you know.
I mean.
You didn't see a lot of him. He was in Chicago. You didn't see him. It was a terrible team. He's nasty.
And I want to see
nasty
him pitch.
Pitcher, yeah.
Lou called him a pig, and he means it in a nice
in
way.
In a good way, yeah.
And Pedro, we all have all lived it. He was must-see TV.
Yep.
Do I think this is going to be that Hall of Fame must-see TV? No, but it's a step closer because they had a bunch of guys last year that made 30 starts.
Yes.
Woo! Like, I was not... were you excited to
bunch
see
of innings eaters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But did you say,
that's
like...
That's pretty good, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I can't do that. I tried that. I can't do
it's
it.
It's a talent.
Yeah.
But were you excited to see those guys? Like, did you, like, pencil them in? Like, I gotta see that game?
Early in the year with Hauk a little bit, but that wasn't a whole season-long thing.
I may be putting too much on Crochet's plate, but that's what I'm expecting.
Yeah.
Every 5 days... I want to watch him pitch and wonder just how dominant he might be that night.
617-779-7937 is the phone number. When we return, we will reset on the Boston Red Sox. The big trade that they made today, Garrett Crochet, going to be pitching at Fenway Park, not just as a visitor, but as the key starter, as the ace of the staff, and maybe even the opening day starter. Are the Red Sox done? We certainly hope not. We got more moves and more ideas for things that they can do. We'll get to all of that right after this.